Okay, so it's 5:36. Let's call the meeting to order.
Okay.
Renee, would you like to
Jaime Tadeo?
Aye.
Annabelle Nunez?
Present.
Kate Calhoun?
Present.
William Ricketts?
Present.
And Martha Lennon.
Present.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. Item number two, approval of the LAR, the legal action report, and the meeting minutes from September 19th. Did you all have an opportunity to review the meeting minutes and the legal action report? If so, may I ask for a call?
Yes.
A motion to approve?
Approve. Or motion to approve.
Do I have a second?
Second. This is Hyman.
Thank you. So we've got an approval and a second.
Okay. Roll call. Jaime Tadeo?
Aye.
Annabelle Nunez?
Aye.
Kate Calhoun?
Aye.
William Ricketts?
Aye.
And Martha Lemon?
Aye.
Thank you. Item number three, report from the chairperson. Both Jaime Tadeo and myself, our terms officially expire on December 3rd, 2023. Mayor and council have the opportunity to roll over or appoint new members. I've not heard from Ward 4. I don't know, Jaime, if you've spoken with the mayor's office. And I ask, how do we proceed forward, directing this question to either legal or to clerk's office?
So from what we understand, since they got reelected, your appointers, it's that we would just need something from them to confirm that they want to reappoint you to your positions on the commission, and then we'll just go through the reappointment process as usual.
Thank you, Renee. Do you actually reach out to them for all of their commission members, or do you expect the commission members to reach out to them to confirm appointee?
So we prior to the around the election time, we had sent out reminders just letting them know which of their appointees were going to be up like. Coterminous with them, with their term, and we just had to wait for the kind of election to be done, and then they should reach out to us. I think we'll send a follow up reminder also after the ceremony where they get reelected, and yeah, we'll just kind of be on standby, and we'll send a reminder also if we don't hear anything in a timely manner.
Okay, great. Thanks. So. I'll have an opportunity to see them at the mayor council meeting at the inauguration. So I'll see if I have a moment to tap them and let them know about Jaime and myself.
Okay.
Jaime's
stated that he'd like to be on for another term.
I beg your pardon?
Do we know that Jaime wants to stay on for another term?
That's my assumptive close.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jaime, would you like to continue to stay on CPARB?
Jaime, yes, please.
I don't know. That's like a lot of pressure to answer right now. I thought I was done after my term. I didn't think I was going to continue after December, you know, but I guess I'm going to reach out to Regina and
if
talk
you can
to her
keep
about
us
it.
Posted.
Yeah.
Great. If you can keep us posted, that would be terrific.
Okay.
We would hate to see you go.
Oh, because it's my fourth year, isn't it?
of your eight?
It's my eighth year.
Yeah, it's your second term, right? The end of your second?
The end of my first.
Oh. Oh, under Lahina. As mayor. Because you were under her as when she was still with council, right?
Yeah.
But that would be a different appointment. And I don't know what I'm talking about, so I will be quiet now.
Yeah, that's how I was kind of confused.
I think you might be okay, but no pressure, like you said.
Okay. All right.
I think it's worth it. If you could check that for us, that would be great, that he would still be able to go on for yet another term.
Yes, we could double check that and reach out to you. I believe he still had some time.
Right.
So he wasn't at his max eight, but I'll double check everything and reach out to you and Hyman.
Okay, thank you. So the other thing that I wanted to mention is that there was an expert from the proposed mayor council rules and regulations that were up for consideration at the mayor council meeting on October 17th, 2023. And it appears as if they are considering a hybrid meeting, meaning that we can be present in person and we can be present electronically. Jaime, can you confirm, or I'm sorry, Renee, can you confirm that this was passed on October 17?
Yes, it was passed. The specific details might be better heard from the city attorney. The city attorney's office, but yes, it was passed to allow a hybrid format of meeting.
Do we have anyone on from the city attorney's office? Is Roy on? No? Okay. All right. So
Madam Chair, I have a question.
Yes.
Is it up to the committee to decide how they want to do it, or do we have to have the hybrid?
If I'm reading this correctly, and I'd like to have Roy kind of comment on this, if I'm reading it correctly, a hybrid meeting should take place in the city facilities that are equipped with necessary audiovisual equipment to allow members of boards and commissions and the public to attend the meeting in person or electronically.
So that will be the standard. It's not an option to not have hybrid and just go face-to-face elsewhere.
That's what I'm reading here, where it was either or. It looks like we have the ability to do both. But I'd like the city attorney to comment if, Renee, you can't, or anyone else from the clerk's office is not able to comment on this.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Mitch.
The paperwork we got last week, maybe, or 2 weeks ago from clerk's office, Mr. Garcia, indicated that a vote was necessary. And I don't know if the new rules that the mayor and council passed recently are now in effect or how that coordinates with what we just got from the clerk's office about meeting in hybrid, because I believe the rule said you needed to vote. And Mr. Garcia was of the opinion that since you were not together to have that vote, this meeting could not be hybrid. So you might want to find out how that works, because if at the last minute you want to have a hybrid meeting because somebody can't make it and somebody can, according to the rules that we just got from Mr. Garcia, you're not allowed to do that, or at least he was of that opinion. So I don't know if the new rules now supersede that, or that's just his interpretation, and possibly you can get a different interpretation. So you might want to get Roy involved in that.
Absolutely. I will do that. There's a couple other documents that were actually sent over. One of them was from the city clerk's office, really kind of summarizing what can and cannot be done. There's also a public notice statement form that we need to complete. Option A would be only if the commissions meet as needed, versus option B, that the commission meets at specific meeting dates, times, and locations. So we need to identify and confirm that we will be able to meet at Ward 6 office on the third Tuesday of the month. So I'd like to put that on the agenda in December. If we can, please, Renee, so that we can vote on the location and the date and confirm it for 2024 before I sign this document.
Yeah, no problem. I can make note of that. And then I could also have Danny Garcia reach out and kind of, I think he has a little more knowledge on the changes, but he was involved heavily. So I can have him reach out and kind of specify any questions you have or confirm anything.
That would be terrific. Okay.
And Madam Chair, I'm not sure. I just wanted to be clear. You want an opinion from Roy Lusk, is from what I understand, if I'm correct, from the city attorney. So who's going to pose those questions to Roy since they're not on right now? Is that going to go through Renee, or do you have to do that yourself? I'm just trying to understand logistics here.
I would like to pose those questions to Roy during our next meeting prior to us voting on the meeting date and location.
All right, so you're going to give him a heads up so he can bring in and be prepared to respond, right?
Yep. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Manager.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. So item number 4, call to the audience. At this time, the community may address the board with their concerns. The board may not address a specific concern at this meeting. However, the board may, at its discretion, make a future agenda item, at which time there can be a discussion. Community members are asked to address the board, not a specific member. Each person is limited to 3 minutes. And I don't know if we've got anyone on this call that would like to address the board. Nope. Okay. So item number 5.
Madam Chair, again, if I could, since I can't shut up today and I apologize.
That's okay.
I had asked Renee, but I'm sure he got busy, but how much notice does somebody need to give to the clerk's office to be able to say, yes, they want to be able to speak at this meeting?
We'd like 48 hours, but it can be up to 24 hours prior to the meeting.
So somebody from the community would need a minimum of 24, just so I'm clear, a minimum of 24 hours notice to you to be able to speak. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Or if it's in person and somebody shows up and would like to speak, it's totally up to the chair and the commission to have the call to the audience. It's their preference. And and same with our virtual format also. Like Chair Calhoun did it perfect where, yeah, if anyone wanted to speak, they could have asked right now and said their piece.
So the former requirement of having to put in advance to actually be permitted to speak is no longer applicable in this new environment. So if somebody were to show up and right now, when Madam Chair asked if anybody wanted to, they could potentially address the board.
Yeah, to the best of my knowledge, yes. Kind of like when Stephen Moore comes to the meetings, he mm-hmm. never really lets us know. He kind of just shows up, and then at that moment when you ask if anyone wants to speak, that's usually when he takes the time to offer to speak or give handouts or whatever he chooses to do so.
That makes sense. So it would just seem to me that we would have to build in a way to be able to acknowledge that during the meeting, once the meeting gets going, because we won't know who's part, right? So somebody mm-hmm. would have to monitor that, and I don't know how somebody would just sort of speak up and then we put them in the queue. But I'm getting really into the weeds of things, but I think, and that's fine with me, that it's not recognizing that it's no longer a requirement for somebody to contact the office or Renee and folks to then get permission to actually do it. But I think it's important to just say that be prepared to have somebody speak during the meeting and acknowledge that. So, because I'm just thinking logistics, right? Like when the agenda goes out and all that kind of stuff. So,
well, Well, the agenda is available online to anybody that wants to find it themselves
right.
in the clerk's office. That's not the issue. But I'm confused. Did I not just hear that 24 hours is required to speak or not?
Well, that's what I'm trying to get really? Clarification on.
Yeah, that's if they want to reach out, like a specific member that wants to request, because then we would have to get that time to let Kate know the exact individual who wants to speak so she can be prepared for it.
So 24 hours notice is required if a community member wants to speak on a Teams meeting, but not in person. Is that correct?
Well, on the Teams meeting, like when Chair Calhoun just spoke right now and asked, they would have that option to say, I would like to speak. And they could also say their piece there also. But we, like we said, we'd like to have 24 hours just to know, just to let the commission know there are people that want to speak. It's kind of more of a heads up. It's a courtesy thing.
But it's not required.
Correct.
Renee, is that correct? It's not required.
To my knowledge, no, because like I said, in-person meetings, community members can just show up and speak, but I can get you clarification on that as well.
Thank you.
Mitch, on the documents that they had sent over, I don't see anything in here with regards to the rules with the general public addressing the commission in person or hybrid.
Yeah,
so we can get that clarification.
I don't either.
Okay. All right. So moving on to item number 5, the review of the TPD investigations. And in accordance with Section 10A-88F of the Mayor Council mandate, the board may only review these charges specifically in the investigation in order to comment on the fairness and thoroughness of the internal investigation, and to report any concerns regarding that investigation to the specified in the mandate. So first case is number 22-0117, and the date of this incident was on March 17, 2022. There are two allegations here that I'm reading. Failure to take appropriate action, use of force, and it looks like there was no discipline and standby. Looking for the complaint. The allegation was with regards to use of force against a bicyclist for riding in the street. And that was over the basketball tournament. I'd like to open it up to any questions or if anyone would like to make a motion to address the fair and thoroughness of the investigation.
Wait, so we're going down the list from the agenda, right? 0117?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
You recall we had officers out on the streets by the U of A during the NCAA tournament, and there were some bicyclists who were riding in the middle of the street. And one of the bicyclists indicated that it was a hard takedown and failure to take appropriate, and the police department failed to take appropriate action.
I don't have any comments on this case. It seemed pretty standard practice with trying to mitigate any kind of March Madness. It was preemptive, I think, operations that were out there. And I think the individuals on the bicycle were sort of just circling around and, couldn't quite catch what kind of directive was given to the individual. But it seemed to me that the individual rolled up on the officer that sort of put his hands on the individual trying to get his attention, trying to get him. But the officer came from behind that took him down. And it seems to me that, it's part of policy and procedure. And I would imagine that because the individual rolled up on the officer after being asked to get off the roadway, that they're just following procedures at that point. So that's just... No questions, really.
It just seems like I was just, you know, I heard more or saw in the testimony several places that probably the individual could have used a little de-escalating training, you know, instead of, you know, this is a public event. You know, yeah, you want to be a friendly public event, good presence with the public, and maybe he overreacted or went to full force or, you know, hard takedown unnecessarily if possible. But, you know, other than that, you know, it was within policy.
Well, if there's no further discussion, I would make a motion to consider case number 22-0117 reviewed as fair and thorough.
Aye. Yes. All third.
Are you ready for a roll call? Jaime Tadeo?
Aye.
Annabelle Nunez?
Aye.
Kate Calhoun?
Aye.
William Ricketts?
Aye.
And Martha Lim?
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay, second case is case number 21-0126. The incident occurred on February 3rd, 2020. Oof. Happened midtown. There were several allegations that were made. The parents actually submitted an online complaint alleging that the officers entered their home without permission and arrested their deaf daughter without cause. The complaints were search and seizure, failure to provide non-English language services, and use of force. Any comments or would like
I have
to?
A question. I have a question on this before I comment.
Yes,
have PPD policies and procedures been updated to require? I mean, I'm hanging up on both the officers that responded to the house knew the person that they were going to arrest, yet they didn't provide the accommodation, knowing that she needed an ASL interpreter. And they got in trouble for that. Has anything in the TPD policy and procedures manual been updated to, without question, require interpreter services when it's known that the person that they're questioning or apprehending needs it?
Yeah, I can answer your question. This is Lieutenant Allen here. No, nothing has been updated because it doesn't need to be. They violated that policy. It already existed.
Okay.
So that was sustained. They should have brought an interpreter.
So I have a question about that specific incident. So is hold on, I have to find it. Sorry, I can limit someone else go before I make a comment. Sorry.
Okay. Has come up before, and Anisia the officer, or at least one of them, was suspended and later reversed. Typically, why does the chief reverse a sustained charge or a suspension? Just curious.
Well, he was, there must have been something compelling that was brought forward after the case to get him to change his mind. I don't know why he changed his mind. That's not for me to determine.
I understand this young lady is had been in the courts, or the courts have seen her quite a few times. So maybe, I don't know what the thought of the guys. The issue with the foot in the door, I guess this is something that was retraining for those officers?
Yes. And they were also brand new, and they did not have a supervisor at the time. So when they were very young and impressionable, the city kind of failed them slightly by not making sure they had a steady supervisor.
Right. I mean, it's good retraining on that and making that clear. I've never seen that come up before with the foot in the door. And then the lady felt like it was, that came in without her permission. But, otherwise, you know, the young lady has been through the courts many times. I'm just not sure why, she hasn't been further remanded at some point for some, you know, for at least a short period of time to get her attention. But that's not our job here. So
it seems like the plan was in place and the officers just either didn't know or they ignored the plan by not calling the detective. Would have told them, hey, hold on. She's going to report tomorrow on her own at 1. So for whatever reason, the officers, I feel, didn't get all the information that they should have gotten, and they were just focused on the arrest when they should have just pushed the brakes and said, you know what, she's going to be here. We don't have to go out there, especially at midnight or late.
I understand that the officers didn't have that information until they spoke with the parents.
That's correct. They did not know that she was going to allegedly be turning herself in until they arrived at the scene or at the parents' house and spoke to the parents. And just keep in mind, this was a domestic violence charge, and we have a lot less discretion on domestic violence charges. And typically, it's kind of a higher priority to make sure they're not going to reoffend.
So, Lieutenant, what in this case, they had made comments that they had spoken with somebody, their attorney. Would PD not contact the attorney to corroborate this information?
So it sounds like the parents with the daughter contacted their own private attorney and made an arrangement with the detective who works a day shift. They went out because the in the system there was still the felony arrest order to go out and arrest her, which was still valid, and she still needed to be arrested. It wasn't until they got there that they realized that something, according to the parents through their attorney, that she was going to be turning herself in at 1 o'clock. Then they get the parents to come outside, and that's when the daughter locks the parents and the officers outside the first time.
Mm-hmm.
While that's all being figured out, what attorney, who's calling what detective, what are the arrangements, and then things got sideways before they had the opportunity to verify that was still the case. At that point, she kind of escalated the situation by locking her parents out of her own home. So now we have a separate thing that the officers got to deal with. Is she going to allow the parents to go back in the home? Is she going to assault the parents? Is there going to be issues once the parents get inside their own home? So it was kind of a mess to begin with.
Mm-hmm. I recognize that Henry's hand is up, but did I miss the locking the parents out?
That was
in the very beginning.
Yeah, so the parents stepped outside to talk to the officers, and they thought the daughter was coming to the door to talk to them. She slammed the door, locked the parents and the officers out front. The dad retrieved the Haida key, opened the door, went back in, started talking to the daughter. That's when they placed their foot back in to make sure the door wasn't going to get shut again.
Gotcha. Thank you. Henry has his
that also.
Henry has his hand up.
I was just going to say, this is one of the first cases that I had when I was brand new in the office. And I can't remember if someone made a comment about the discipline being reduced. I can't remember off the top of my head if it was a factor, but the officer that was facing discipline voluntarily went to go seek some sensitivity training when dealing with people with a hearing disability. And I think that may or may not have played a role, that he went out voluntarily and requested that training on his own. But I remember that being a thing, and that could have been part of the consideration as to why the discipline was reduced. So I don't know if that was a factor, but I do remember that variable being in play.
Understand.
I will say again, this is a really great documentation. The way it was written out, it was easy to sort of follow, and I think that's very helpful when trying to, you know, pull the information together. Though I can't find exactly where, if there's any explanation as to why that was retracted either.
Why what was retracted?
The suspension.
Okay. No, I agree. That was news to me too.
If I can cut in, it looks like it's on page 94 of the document, and that's where the chief, 94 and 95 is where the chief wrote his decision on why he reduced the suspension for Officer Wade or Cooper.
It should have been Wade.
So, you know, talking sort of just the procedural things and sort of, I mean, I feel like that phone call, I know it was at midnight, and I, you know, that phone call to the detective might have helped quite a, you know, could have clarified some things. Has anything changed in terms of this kind of scenario in terms of policies or procedures with the department? Just curious.
Mikey. This was one of the first things I dealt with when I was the OPS lieutenant too, early in my tenure there. The chief actually directed that the department, as part of his reduction of the discipline, directed that we review our general orders in regards to, it was General Order 2713, to make sure that we were in line with national best practice. Our strategic communications and policy administrator did review those, reviewed recommendations from the Police Executive Research Forum and also from the International Association of Chiefs of Police, and found that our policies were currently in line with national best practices and that the policies didn't need to be changed, which is what Lieutenant Allen spoke about earlier, is that the policies were in place and the officers just violated them, which is why they had the sustained finding. Also, there was training after this incident that had been provided to the department because of this incident, in regards to dealing with members of this population of the community.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any other comments or concerns?
We'll go ahead and move to it was fair and thorough.
I wonder if Jaime got to what he was looking for, but there's a motion on the floor, so.
Well, it was just a question, but it's not necessarily relevant to being fair and thorough. It was just more curiosity, but I can live without it.
I'll second the motion made by Mr. Ricketts that case number, what is this case number? 22-0126 be found fair and thorough.
I think that was 221.
Did I give it the wrong number? Oh, yeah.
I think so.
I apologize. Let me amend my second to the motion that we find case number 21-0126 fair and thorough. My apologies.
Okay, roll call. Jaime Tadeo.
Aye.
Annabelle Nunez.
Aye.
Kate Calhoun.
Aye.
William Ricketts.
Aye.
And Martha Lynn.
Aye.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. So case number 3, which is case number 22-0444. The date of the incident was 4/20/2021. Looks like this happened over in the South, Operation Division South. The allegations were failure to provide appropriate service. And the complainant indicated that his vehicle should have been returned and not forfeitured. And also complaint about an inappropriate search. Anyone have any comments?
I'm really not sure where to start on this one because there's so much stuff around the periphery that has nothing to do whether it's fair and balanced or fair and thorough. The date the incident occurred is just, these are, you know, kind of like footnotes to the whole process of this particular arrest and complaint. The date was 4/20. The governor signed a bill on 5/6, a couple weeks later, 2010, that made it illegal for us to seize and forfeiture, or not seize, but have someone forfeit their property and assets without being convicted. I did check in with online with state legislature to where there's a time limit that they give them before it takes effect after the last closure of their, which was, ends up being September 30th. And some of the things that make me, also Judge Curry noted that these type of things are not considered retroactive, so the guys, car was seized and forfeited. It was within the law and the policy. However, I think search and seizure has a real odorous element to it as far as agencies, municipalities, treat it as an income stream or source of revenue. And that shows us the case with Arizona as well, with their reduction in seizures. But this was done within the law. But under the places that still use that, it's more of, instead of search and seizure, it's seizure and search. My next, I guess the most thing as far as a thorough investigation, the evidence that was taken and documented, the charges that were brought, we ended up with methamphetamine essentially in the car. And a firearms charge. first thing is he ends up with just a probation for weapons violation. And every officer that I've talked to at the academy, when I went on a check ride, I talked to the Assistant Chief Don, that the meth is our biggest problem. And if we have an issue with meth, why wasn't this guy charged? Why wasn't he convicted of it?
I believe it was meth and fentanyl.
Meth, okay.
And fentanyl.
You know, as fentanyl, and those have been repeatedly the worst things that our officers have had to deal with. When I was talking to the officers at the academy or the trainers, and even on the check ride, they asked me what are the most common complaints, and I haven't been there very long, but it's rudeness and the or around that in nature. And when I ask them what's their biggest problem, their biggest concern is small, to where there's having people dying, they're administering Narcan almost every day. And if that's such a big thing for our city, community, department, what went wrong? I didn't see anything in the investigation on why this guy wasn't charged for the fentanyl. So I'm real squeamish about this whole thing. When I assume this guy, if he has fentanyl in his car, he's not one of our model citizens. The fact that he wasn't convicted of it, and granted his car was forfeited legally in policy, but the whole thing, if it's so important, what did the prosecutor just not want to do it? We may not be able to answer that, but if there's an issue that is there some failure on the city's part, the department's, that this guy isn't in jail.
But so the key takeaway then really is the forfeiture piece, right? Because that's the complaint that he is saying.
Right.
That.
And this is outside that, yes. But
yeah.
It doesn't show a full, you know, a thorough investigation if I can't answer a simple question like, okay, this guy's charged with something pretty serious. And, you know, just a question there. It just doesn't seem like there's enough of an investigation why this is not. If we did something wrong, wouldn't that show up as far as the officers? There was a failure there. Was there custody of the evidence? So I have real challenges with that, despite seizures and forfeitures being not so savory, but it's legal.
So I think that these are really good questions, Bill, and I think that they should be directed to the county attorney, because I don't know if the police department would be making those decisions, but you certainly correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, I asked, and I'm not supposed to, that contact is only made through you, but I'm not supposed to be contacting those people because it's perceived as way outside the...
Just to clarify, because different words were just used just now, and they really mean different actions. So let me just clarify. He, in fact, was charged with a felony.
Right, he was charged, but they were dropped.
That's correct. So as a rhetorical question, I certainly understand Mr. Ricketts' position, but really as a question to be answered, that would have to be posed to the county attorney. It wasn't forgotten about. I'm looking at the plea agreement, and it specifically says as part of the plea that the narcotics charge would be dropped. However, why it was is that's I don't think anybody really at this meeting would be in a position to respond to that. But he was in fact charged.
Yeah, and it's just I mean the guy's claiming he was informant and there was no follow up yes or no. I'm sure it's probably no. But and I'm reading this whole voluminous thing. Just it doesn't seem like it was thorough.
I have a slightly different take on this one. Here, so mine was that yeah, the officers did what they needed to do within the scope of the law at that time. So on one way to look at it is it's because of the forfeiture laws, and, you know, I have judgments about what they used to be, for sure, and it could be why the law was changed as far as when assets that have been seized because they may or may not have been involved in the felony act, that the county or the state county can't get rid of them until after that criminal until after that criminal matter is cleared up. So I see why and how the law was changed, and it really kind of sucks for that. The complainant, he got busted and his stuff got seized within the scope of the law, but right at the cusp of the change. So bad timing on his part is breaking the law, that's for sure.
Absolutely. But, absolutely. Well, it just seems like a lot of coincidence. The, you know, the judge that signed the forfeiture to allow them to dispose of it was on 9/30, date that it took effect. I'm sure that is just, you know, coincidence, but and it is just this whole one is just is unsavory for me.
Well, bad timing on the previous car owner's part, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think if fentanyl is that big of a crisis in our community, why wasn't he charged? Why are we pleading this guy out to a probation on a weapons charge? That just, yeah, like you say, it's to ask the county attorney, but that's, you know, if you're going to mention that in there, maybe we don't need to know whether he was charged or not charged. Just show the evidence that he had the stuff.
Yeah, that seems to be beyond the scope of CPARB.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, focusing on the fair and thoroughness of it.
Yeah, I don't think
throw out that. Yeah, this within the scope of the law at that time. Yeah, TPD was thorough for sure, and forfeiture laws at that time were not really fair, but that's not a problem.
That's not our call.
That's the state law.
So, being on that note, I think like this case was actually one of like the easiest for me to actually follow, especially like during the summary. So, with that being said, I moved 4K 22-0444 to be fair and thorough.
I'll second.
I do not.
All right, roll call. Jaime Tadeo?
Aye.
Annabelle Nunez?
Aye.
Kate Calhoun?
Aye.
William Ricketts?
No.
And Martha Lemon?
Aye.
All right, thank you.
All right, good discussion. So trying to keep a good time here. So let's move on to case number 22-0389. There were two officers that were involved in this incident, which occurred on September 8th, 2022. The allegations were failure to make a report and failure to investigate. The complainant indicated that this individual, she was upset because the officers entered her home for a welfare check. And she felt that the police overreach was unwarranted and didn't understand why police didn't wait for her to call back before they entered her home.
Yeah, I think this is one of the easiest ones. You know, come on. You want us to call you to see if you're on the floor in duress, and you can't respond.
I agree. So if
agreed to,
I think we're in agreement, so we can make a motion.
Yes. And it was an opportunity also to do some coaching with the CSO on the matter. So I agree. It's one of the easiest ones for sure. Absolutely. So I'll make a motion to for case number, my gosh,
22-0389.
Thank you. That we find that case fair and thorough.
Second. This is Jaime. Hey,
okay, roll call. Jaime Faleo.
Aye.
Annabelle Nunez.
Aye.
Kate Calhoun?
Aye.
William Ricketts?
Aye.
Martha Lemon?
Aye.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you. So moving on to case number 22-0473. This incident occurred on December 6, 2022, happened in Division Eastside, Operations Division Eastside. Allegations include take appropriate action, and the individual made a complaint against the officers for incomplete investigation.
So I have a quick question about this one. So from what I get from this case is the fact that she's complaining that there is no further investigation because she withheld the assault.
Yes.
What she wanted
for not being a mind reader was
right.
It wasn't the outcome she was demanding.
Yeah, there was not a whole lot to this one. I think she answered the questions that the officer asked, and so with the information that he received, the investigation took the turn that it did. And unfortunately, again, as mentioned, she didn't get the outcome she wanted. Thus, she was going to further pursue whatever action, and you know, what kind of evidence do we have? We don't have any evidence here. Neither does the police officer of those allegations of threats and guns being involved and all that other stuff. So I would, further discussion from the board, I would put a motion forward of finding case number 22-0473 as fair and thorough.
Second.
I'll
second. Aye. Okay, roll call. Jaime Taleo?
Aye.
Annabelle Nunez?
Aye.
Kate Calhoun?
Aye.
William Ricketts?
Aye.
And Martha Lim?
Aye.
Thank you.
All right, and our final case, number 22-0474. This occurred on December 21st, 2022, Operations Division West, and the complainant indicated that no one was cited for the accident that she was involved in, and the allegations were incomplete. And inaccurate reporting.
This is the police chase, bicycle chase of the runner who ended up having a medical incident.
Mm-hmm.
And the soft stop that she described, not once but twice, in order to not hit either running individual or the police officer. So she was very thorough in her interviews. Very, very thorough.
Yep,
she had a good...
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think she brought up some really good points in terms of like failure to control your vehicle.
But
so it seems part of her frustration with the whole thing would be I feel that the officers did what they needed to do, and the complainant was frustrated because she was told no by the insurance company, and it seems that her issue is with the insurance company. And it seems like members of the public, anyone, think that having citation or is exactly what they need for the insurance companies to say, oh, all right, yeah, we're going to pay out. But insurance companies don't work that way. They always know initially, right? Anyway, that's from experience working for personal injury lawyers. So my take was, yeah, it's frustrating to get rear-ended, and that's a separate fight with the insurance company that may or may not even need a citation or to have anyone get cited. So I'm on Team TPD on this one.
I agree with Martha. I appreciate the fact that there was a section too that described that the report documentation, could have been improved. So I appreciated that.
Yes, that was good.
It was a very busy scene with a lot of activity and a lot of people involved. You know, and hopefully the young man is okay now and all that good stuff. So, but.
If I see somebody be chased by TPD, I don't think I would have stopped. I would have helped. And I'm also just kidding.
Yeah.
It's a moment decision. Someone has a question.
I do have a question about the CSOs. So is there, and it's all about CSOs and training and perhaps this one particular CSO's experience or lack of experience that contributed to the report that they generated. Are CSOs good at writing collision reports generally? And how does this one rank amongst the CSOs?
If I may, I think I can speak to this one a little bit because this was an interesting case for us when it came into this CSO was pretty new at the time of this, and the sergeant that he worked for actually accepted some responsibility in this case also when we reached out to him. And part of that is that the case is reviewed and then approved, and there were some things that, like you said, pointed out, Martha, that were missed in the documentation. And that's why we sent it back to the chain as an EC2. But speaking to the supervisor of the CSO later after this, there were definite improvements in him, just as with anybody else through experience. And this was a weird collision that, you know, typically on a rear end collision, somebody's usually going to get cited for rear ending. And this is kind of one of those odd cases where he was following at a safe distance for the traffic at the time, and then all of a sudden there's a pedestrian running through the road that nobody expects and people slamming on their brakes. So we actually did, I don't know if Detective Gutnick documented it, but as part of our investigation for this one, I reached out to our traffic investigation sergeant and ran this by him to make sure that he agreed that it was appropriate to not cite in this case, which he did. So this was a very weird one to throw at a CSO, where even when it came to our office and we weren't trying to investigate it on the scene, we were still trying to, you know, bounce ideas off of each other and reaching out to experts to make sure that everything was done appropriately.
Thank you.
Well, anyone like to make a motion?
I'm happy to make a motion. Oh, go ahead.
That it's fair and thorough.
I'll second that.
Case number 22-0474, be seen as fair and thorough.
Okay, roll call. Jaime Tadeo?
Aye.
Annabelle Nunez?
Aye.
Kate Calhoun?
Aye.
William Ricketts?
Aye.
And Martha Lemon?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so item number 6, Tucson Police Department, in accordance with the provisions of the state open public meeting law, these items are listed on the agenda in order to allow TPD to present a brief summary of current events pursuant to provisions ARS section 38-431.02. The board may not propose, discuss, deliberate, or take action at this meeting on any matter in the updates unless specific matter is properly noticed for legal action at a subsequent meeting. TPD update regarding events or development related to TPD during the prior month.
Hi, Kate. It's Diana.
Hi, Diana.
I finally got over to the right meeting. So updates for us is just finishing El Tour. I mean, these next few months are crazy busy. We had El Tour, Special Olympics, church events last Saturday. So just trying to manage the staffing for that. We've also had several street racer deployments. And it's more of the street takeovers. So we would see the racing, but it's a particularly younger group. And they go to an intersection and they spin in donuts and they purposely try to hit each other. It's the oddest, most ridiculous, thing that there is, but it's really tasking on resources. So we've been working those, quite a bit. And then the last few weeks, every time we go home at 2:30 in the morning, it happens at 3:30 or 4:30. So division wide, we're affected by that. Kia and Hyundai, thefts are rapid throughout the city. Unfortunately, there's also juveniles involved. So the prosecution, on those are really hard to get. So I have all four divisions working together on those, to try and get like repeat offenders, because the same folks are being victimized over and over and over again. And so we're trying to work on those as well as the street takeovers. They're actually violent. They've thrown fireworks at police. There's somebody got shot in a crowd the other day. So super violent. If you see them at an intersection, do not approach. So we're doing our best to strategize there, get information out. I know it's been in the public a little bit. And so the divisions right now are just working on those issues to try and come together to make things more effective throughout the city. So in case someone's doing it down south, but they're also doing it out east, like we're really trying to communicate to make sure that we're addressing that overall as a city approach. And then there's going to be Christmas. So we'll be at the malls and all of the box stores, et cetera, for some additional presents.
Thank you. Wow.
That's it. Yeah.
It's frightening that these kids are behaving this way.
Yeah. They're really young too. Especially in the auto thefts, but even, I mean, 14, 15, 16, 17, even in the street takeover. So.
Wow.
It is.
So may I ask a question?
Yes.
The autos that are used in the street racing, are they the ones that are being stolen? Or are they using a dad's car? Like, how is that all working?
Yeah, normally not. They're not stolen. And honestly, we have a no pursuit policy. So oftentimes they'll take off. We have been able to do a couple deployments where we're able to get them and impound them. But oftentimes, and I think it's called Turo, there's like a, where you can rent a car, but people rent their personal vehicles. So sometimes it's like that. And we have learned that, you know, mom is like, huh, the wear on my tires shouldn't be this bad. And so learning that some kids are taking their own cars, their parents' cars, et cetera. And so we're looking for a longer approach, maybe some legislation changes, because it is affecting other states and they're doing different things, as well as maybe insurance companies. First time, notify your insurance company. Second time, your rates, you know, it's going to be really hard to get insurance. And so at least some sort of monetary punishment to try and stop that from continuing.
So through Turo, they're renting their own vehicles. And then they're going out and using them as their,
they rent somebody's vehicle. Like, so say an individual rents their vehicle out and folks will rent vehicles that way. But honestly, most of them don't even seem to be rentals. It seems to be their own cars, family cars, friend cars.
Yeah.
Occasionally a stolen car, but not, you would think that somebody wouldn't want to use their own car to do something like that.
And you're saying young, so I mean,
yeah.
Are you saying like under 18 or?
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I mean, some over 18, but there have been numerous 16, 17 year olds out there partaking in this.
Stay safe out there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so Office of Professional Standards.
Good evening. I just have a couple of quick updates. As far as the summary of the last month, I mean, obviously, we've just been kind of cruising along doing our cases, things like that. We did have some higher profile cases that we've done some stuff on that you guys will see down the road. In the future, though, just so you guys are know what's kind of coming on the horizon, we do have another sergeant coming into the office in December. She'll be joining us, Sergeant Lisa Rizzi. And so she'll be coming in mid-December. So we'll be going to four sergeants as investigators and four detectives as investigators. And then we also, in next month, are going to be finishing up some accreditation stuff with the Arizona Law Enforcement Accreditation Program. And that's something that's a statewide voluntary program that we are partaking in. And it's something that... it's a lot of work. We have a detective full-time assigned to that, and it's been really good making sure that, you know, we're following best practices and we're coordinating with the other big agencies and, well, actually all the agencies in the state to make sure that we're all on the same page when it comes to that, so with Phoenix and different agencies. So The first accreditation's a pretty big lift, showing all of our policies, procedures, and proofs that we're following the different guidelines. But that should be coming to a head here, December-ish or so. By the end of the year, we should be done. So that's a big weight that's going to be lifted when it's done. Other than that, that's about it for the actual updates that we have going on currently.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lieutenant. So item number 7, Office of Independent Police Auditor.
Good evening. Judge. Good evening again. All right. I know you all missed me. I was gone for 3 weeks out of our last period, 2 weeks in the Philippines, as I told you before, and 1 week in Phoenix, and had a great time. I'm not going to take your time up now for a travel log, but I'd be happy to share pictures with you later. It really was nice. While I was there, like an idiot, I did take some complaints on the phone. I guess that's a business deduction. I have to ask my tax guy how that's going to work. But I took a few complaints, but I was not able to do any case reviews, which is really okay. All right, a couple things that are probably more relevant. Carlos Portillo, as you know, is your new advisory board member, and I spoke with him. He is still recovering from a medical procedure, and he hopes to be on board up and running very soon. So I wanted to give you that much information. Also, Bill, I don't know if you shared with everybody previously, but I know Bill did a ride-along probably since our last meeting together. And just to remind everybody that according to the city ordinance, whereas they're not required, there is a training that is required, and they are recommending ride-alongs. And they recommend one ride-along per quarter for a minimum of 4 hours. So 4 one-hour ride-alongs kind of thing. But if you do those, please forward them to Kate so she can tally up your hours, and eventually there may need to be a report filed with mayor and council, and those training hours are going to be a part of that report as well. Moving on a little bit, TPD has just created a new position, which you're going to want to know about, called civilian investigator. You've had presentations in the past about CSOs. What are they? What do they do? And how do they do? So you might want to think about bringing somebody in from TPD to talk about a civilian investigator. What is that? And so you're ahead of the curve if you start to see that name or that title in any of the reports on the cases that you review. I was just asked to give a talk at their first academy class about with OPS about civilian oversight and about OPS and officer professional standards. So that's going to be sometime in January. So that's something you might want to think about certainly down the road as well. Other than that, I'm looking at notes. I think that's all I've got. Anybody have any questions? No. Thank you.
Mitch, yeah, just real quick, you didn't go to NACO, but are you hearing anything or tracking?
No, you know what? I'm very disappointed. That's the first conference I've missed in many, many, many years. And, you know, a lot of that's because I was going to be gone for 3 weeks. And then the turnaround and go away for another two, it would have been just a little bit too much this year. And I got texts from people going, where are you? Because I was usually the guy stuck with buying the beers, so I'm sure they miss me. At any rate, I don't know what's going on. They're going to have some voting pretty soon, and I'll find out what's going on and share that with the board as it's brought to my attention.
And they're back here in Tucson next year, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. This current year, they're in Chicago, and next year they're in Tucson again.
Cool.
It's simple, easy to attend. It's going to be at the Star Pass, as it was a couple years back. And because they afforded us a break, it really happened during the pandemic. And so to allow us to kind of beg out of a contract, we had to, or Nicole had to agree to hold it here next year. So it will be here again next year. I'll bring that to you as soon as I know. It usually happens about this time of year. They really are super conferences. You guys will be able to go. I've already talked to city manager about that. So So you're going to be on board with that. And I'm going to get you, make sure that you guys are funded for that as well. It's several days. It's chock full of sessions. You know, we'll let you know the sessions ahead of time. If any of them float your boat and you want to go, please let me know. I'll absolutely make sure that happens for you. But we're still really a few months from really knowing much about it. So I'll let you know.
Thanks, Mitch.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mitch. Okay, so I think, Mitch, you did. Someone have a question?
No, just thank you.
Oh, okay. Mitch, you identified agenda item number 8, CPARB vacancies, and you were talking about Carlos Portillo. So sounds like he's ready to come on board. He needs to go through the training, so I'm glad that you all connected. And I will follow up with Jaime and Mayor and Ward 4 office about their appointees, me and Jaime, and move forward. Item number 9, future agenda items. Is there anything that you'd like to hear or discuss? Going, gone. Okay. All righty. So it is 6:52. I would like to call the meeting adjourned. Thank you, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving.
Likewise. Thank you.
Bye. Gobble, gobble.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Bye. Have a good night.